Hello there, it's Zach, and welcome to the Timekeepers. We'll be mentioning briefly some of the things that we're going to go through. The first thing that we'll be kind of discussing is watches and wonders and some of our favourite pieces. But before we move on to that, there's a couple of things we'd like to do. First, we'd love to welcome our guest for this episode, which is Chris, the dial artist. So welcome, Chris. It's great to have you on the show.
Hi, Zach. Yeah, thank you very much for the introduction.
Sure.
It's wonderful to be here and looking forward to chatting all things watches with you guys.
Awesome. Great to have you on. Looking forward to the discussion. And Tim, how have you been? How have things been? How's your holiday been? You've been away. Love to hear a bit about that.
Yeah, welcome. Yeah, fellow timekeepers. Yeah, so I went to France for a fortnight, but I think I got COVID because I couldn't taste or smell anything. So all that nice wine, all that nice cheese, didn't buy any of it because what was the point? But I did take my Omega Seamaster 300, you know, the one with the summer blue dial, and I did take my Oris Big Crown pointed eight, you know, with the green dial and the bronze, which was nice. But yeah, the kids were poorly for a little bit, but my wife and I were poorly for like most of it. So yeah, that was pretty bad. And obviously it was during Watches and Wonders as well. So that's a lot for us to talk about. So should we, before we do Watches and Wonders, should we do a wrist check? So Zach, what have you got on your wrist?
Yes, I would go next. It's actually not on my wrist, funnily enough, because I had a change of straps and ran out of time. But I actually have my vintage Zenith. I'll just pop right there.
Very nice.
Yeah, so I have that. It's I believe from Norwich, a Norwich kind of AD WR Bulletin LTD is what's read on the dial. But yeah, yet to have a strap on it just yet. How about yourself, Tim?
Yeah, so I've got my Cartier Tank, the Vermeil from the 1990s, and it's the one that we've got. Nice. Here, obviously, because I got it blown up, so you can see it with the blue steel hands and obviously the Cartier in the corner. So really, really like that. Yeah, and it was a big day at work. So you had some really big meetings with some important people and sort of got some good results. So obviously you trust in the Cartier tank to sort of get you through the day like that. So yeah, very good there.
Fantastic. Great choice. And Chris?
I have my trusty 114-300 Grape OP. So this is the discontinued 39mm Oyster Perpetual. Wow. It doesn't come on the Super Jubilee. So the Super Jubilee from the Datejust fits this, actually. So that reference number is the 63600, if anybody's interested and is able to snap one up. And I think it works really well. So, yeah.
Cool. Right. I don't ever seen it in the Grape. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, they did, it's kind of like a sunburst grape. So they did grape, silver, black. They did a nice blue as well. And then rhodium as well, so instead of silver, rhodium dial. So yeah, the grape is my favorite. I think it's just, suits my color. So we say suits my style.
Oh, brilliant. Awesome. I'm going to have to look it up after this. It looks very good.
Yeah, it's super cheap if you can get hold of one. For whatever reason, they I mean, obviously, a couple of years ago, you go back and watches are silly prices, but now I think you can probably pick one up for, I say super cheap. It's stupid to say super cheap when you're talking several thousand pounds, but for a Rolex, super cheap.
Very good. Cool. So we'll do a bit of watch news. So we'll do sort of do this briefly. And like I said, we're not journalists. We're not like a news, you know, watch news channel service. So we're not chasing headlines or anything. But we just wanted to give our reflections on Watches and Wonders because, you know, all of us here love watches and, you know, the listeners as well. So just before I start, it was kind of like the day before Watches and Wonders, or like 2 days before, it was the unexpected release from Fears. And you know, I love their Brunswick jump hour that they have. The purple one, limited edition. I've got a few more colorways now, and I really like the black in particular. But they're back with sort of their more rectangular cases, case shapes in the form of the Arnos. And I think it's a gorgeous dial, you know, deep blue, sort of traditional, sort of circular dial, with Roman numerals. But it's got this sort of gray hobnail outer part that sort of presents for me like an industrial feel, despite being a dress watch. Huge fan, and I really can't wait to try it on. I don't know, Zach, Chris, if we had a chance to do that, but I think we need a trip to Bristol. And we had Watch Yourself George on a few episodes ago, and obviously he's based in Bristol or the West Country, so maybe we'll pop over to see him and he can show us around. But yeah, Chris, I don't know what you think about the Arnos, and then Zach, you know, in terms of, you know, design as well.
I mean, yeah, I mean, Fears are doing amazing things these days. Obviously, they are kind of going from strength to strength in the last couple of years. And I think the jumping hour seems to be the watch of Watches of the Wonders. Everybody seems to be from nowhere, but everybody seems to have got the memo, you know. So it's really cool to see what they've done. I mean, I also thought the Bremont jumping hour is quite pretty. I thought that was quite a nice looking watch as well. But yeah, no, the Fears is stunning, and it can't go wrong with that. You know, blue dial, Roman numerals, it's a classic.
Yeah, Zach, what about you?
Yeah, absolutely. I think Chris kind of like summed it up well. I think the Arnos is a really interesting move from Fears. The rectangular case really brings a touch of vintage like formality that contrasts nicely with the industrial edge of the hobnail texture, which you kind of mentioned, Tim. I really like the grey outer ring as well. That gives the watch some unexpected modernity, even though the Roman numerals and traditional dial layout root it firmly in like a classic design. I feel like it's that mix that makes it work pretty well, like quite dressy but with character. But I love to see how it wears. I'd love to see how it wears on the wrist, especially with that sort of case shape. I kind of feel like Fears seem to be leaning into more confident and bold designs lately, which is really good to see, and I'm here for it.
Very good. Like I said, let's go and see their offices and maybe try out some watches, which would be really cool.
Absolutely.
So let's do Watches and Wonders. Let's try and do it in 5 or so minutes, because it's been done to death elsewhere. But I'm going to overlook Rolex and the Land Dweller. As people know, I'm not a Rolex guy. So let's just say, that I'm not a big fan of modern Rolex. You know, I do like my vintage stuff, but we'll move past the Land Dweller. Someone else can pick that up. But for me, I've got four. I mean, I can never pick just one. First one up, quite kind of the obvious, but the Tudor Block by 58 with the red dial. Appreciate it's the highlight of most people's Watches and Wonders, and a few have even bought them. I saw on Instagram, so huge congratulations to them. Need to see it in the flesh and compare it in different lights, especially sunlight. I'm worried it's probably like a bit too on the pinky side, but again, following Instagram, a few people have said actually in the flesh it is really good, and it is more that sort of dark burgundy. And I'd love to add sort of a red burgundy watch to my collection at some point. You know, the modern Reverso is really good, obviously the modern Tank as well, and those Grand Seikos, and I'm going to name drop a few in a minute. We went to the Grand Seiko sort of London flagship a few months ago, didn't we, Zach? And we were really, really bowled over by those. But this new Black with 58 is kind of making me consider offloading perhaps my original matte black dial, which again is one of my firm favorites and it's sort of a go-to for me. But obviously this has got the more lollipop hand over the snowflake, which sort of makes it more of a sort of interesting proposition for me, because I love my lollipop dial. And I'm sure, Chris, you've already in your head got a few ideas for tweaking it, making it all better on the dial, perhaps. What do you think, Chris?
I think Tudor is very rapidly standing on its own kind of two legs and kind of coming away from Rolex's shadow, which is wonderful to see. They're very quickly brushing off this baby or cheap man's Rolex kind of facade, which is wonderful because they are incredible watches. I mean, I've had the absolute pleasure to work with many of them. I love what they're doing. I love their fun quirkiness. Even the things when they do fun one-off watches for the Miami GP and all these kind of things, it's fun. You know, it's what the watch industry really needs. Saying that's kind of, we call them novelties in the watch industry. I don't know who's feeling so well off that to kind of buy these novelties, so to speak, where you have like the Hermes with the horse ticking its tongue out. But to see accessible watches at accessible prices for the enthusiast collector is wonderful. So yeah, I'm all for what Tudor's doing. Same with kind of even Tag. I mean, I know their kind of their resurgence into kind of the realm of Formula One is bringing out a lot of nostalgia. So I'm keen to see what that brings in a couple of years' time. I know the KISS stuff, I'm not really a big fan of those kind of watches, but I'm keen to see how they and what they do with the Monaco. I think that's going to be something special. So yeah, and you know, who knows? Maybe Omega's going to do something and reignite the Schumacher Speedmaster of late. Who knows? There might be a resurgence of motorsport from different brands. But yeah, I'm keen to take it.
You're a big Formula One fan, then. I'm a big Formula One fan as well. So
love it.
I mean, I sort of grew up watching Williams. You know, Damon Hill. That's when I first got into it, and then sort of, you know, when he sort of left Williams, I moved over more to McLaren. And that was, I suppose, you know, Hakkinen being able to beat Schumacher. So that's what I like.
Yeah,
so I've always liked McLaren, and obviously now with Norris and Piastri. So I'm a big Papaya fan here.
Yeah. I know it's not to kind of hijack the conversation, but it's Piastri's to lose this year for sure.
Yeah, he's got that steel about him, doesn't he? Whereas, he's
an absolute killer. He's a ninja. You know, he's an absolute ninja.
Norris, I don't know if he's got the mentality, but we'll see what happens. See what happens. But yeah, so we digress, but I could talk about Formula One for a very long time. We could have a new podcast about Formula One, but there we go. Zach, what do you think about the burgundy dial then on the new Blood Bear 58?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of it, to be honest. And is it a Jubilee band that it's on as well?
Yeah, I think it's on a few bracelets, like, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. And then it's, but especially on the Jubilee band, that's what caught out to me. In terms of like the style and design in combination with that band, I feel like it works really well. It's cool to see different colors. And I think Chris kind of mentioned it's great to see like them kind of stepping out and doing kind of unique different style pieces, keeping things fun and creative. As you know, Tim, me and Tim, Tim still has his Tudor Black Bay. I did have one. So I definitely, I'm a big fan of the watch and did enjoy mine, but so it's great to see like kind of like new iterations that Tudor are coming up with. Really exciting.
Yeah, cool. And the next one for me is, again, so impressed with Grand Seiko, and they released it's called the Kiri, which is basically a sort of soft purple dial, and yeah, we'll flash it up on screen. And my head was sort of turned anyway by the beautiful sort of red autumnal ones they had, and I'm going to again butcher the pronunciation, but they called it the morning glow of the Hatoika Peaks. And supposedly that was a wonderful, like I said, autumnal red, and it came out last year. But this is sort of more of a subtle purple. It's another spin on their sort of color wheel and the many seasons you get in Japan. But the dial technique is just absolutely stunning, and I really like it on the bracelet as well. And then sort of just skipping through a few, we all love on this sort of podcast, the Calatrava, so the Patek Philippe 6196P with that pink dial. As I said before, Calatrava is the perfect watch, dress watch, maybe the perfect watch. And so it comes as no surprise that I was just, absolutely sort of, completely bowled over by what they did. I've called it simply pink, but I think when I went on Patek's website, just for preparation for this, they called it an opaline rose gilt dial. So there we go. But it's pink for me, whatever words they want to call it. But it's, again, it's simplicity. And that's why it's beautiful. And the hour markers are a neat touch as well. Sort of really zoomed in on it. They're sort of darker and I've got this sort of shine to them. And it adds kind of a moodiness to the dial that, again, you don't normally expect from a Calatrava. But I don't know, Chris, what you think about Calatravas, more broadly. But I really, really loved it from Watches and Wonders.
Yeah, I mean, I've not had the top, kind of the opportunity to kind of work with Patek yet. But they are like the quintessential dress watch. They are no hold bars. They're not trying to be anything other than just a pretty classic watch, and they do it so well. And I mean, the kind of almost like a coppery, very light coppery hue to the dial is amazing. I don't know what they want to call it. It sounds like some sort of Farinball style color that they've picked out there, but yeah, it's beautiful. So kudos to Patek for kind of leaning on that kind of collection and really, really kind of moving that forward, which is great to see.
No, definitely. And I'll just touch on my final one for me. And again, we're big Cartier fans here. Maybe we should just have a podcast dedicated just solely Cartier. But it was the Santos Dumont XL, and it's in this brown dial. And I think when you say brown dial, I think, oh my God, you know, what's that look like in the flesh? But I think they pulled it off really well. And again, it's got a red cabochon. You know, I'm a big fan of the cabochon. They should have all different colors, not just the blue, and make it accessible for people. But again, love the brand. I prefer more of the vintage Santos Dumont. I just think the proportions on the dial for the vintage ones are better over a modern one, but this variant really struck me. So yeah, big tick for me with the red cabochon. Was like drawn to the colored dial and its finish. I don't know, Zach, what you thought about that one, because I know you're thinking of perhaps dabbling in another Cartier.
Yeah, definitely. This was kind of an interesting one from Cartier. I feel like they have quite a few colorful dials and different dials, but this kind of dial, kind of rosy brown looking dial with the red cabochon, was definitely something that I wasn't expecting. I think it's a great looking piece. Like, as you mentioned as well, I've been kind of like going on a frantic, not frantic, but I've been kind of having a bit of an obsessive search when it comes to kind of new Cartier Dumont. I mean, I would love a vintage one, but the price point's just slightly higher. But these newer
just slightly, like double the price.
yeah. I mean, I've been looking. Okay, I'll be honest. I've been looking at some Cartier Dumonts that were, and they kind of range from the 2.25 mark in a secondhand market to about 2.32. But then the vintage Cartier Dumonts I've been looking at have been about 10K. So that's a slight increase there. So slightly out of my reach, unfortunately.
But you'd be a man of refined tastes if you got the vintage one. So
that's true. Do I wait? Or do I get something now? I don't know. I mean, I'm not saying it's definitely off the cards, the vintage Dumont, but it may just be not for now. But they the vintage ones definitely do look a lot better. But yeah, this Cartier is brilliant. I feel like Cartier are quite consistent with some of their new models as well.
Cool.
I'm not too sure if Chris has a note to add on that Cartier.
No, I mean, Cartiers have had a few beautiful watches. The only acceptable square watch in my eyes. So, they do wonderful things, and it's good to kind of see them bring kind of new. I like the enameled inlays of some of the Dumonts as well. I do wish for them to be a wee bit more daring, which is very un-Cartier. I know, and yeah, it's like the classic fuck 9 to 5 and the Cartier.
Mm. Yeah.
And I just feel as if, like, I feel like Cartier is like sitting on a very knife edge of perfection and crazy, and they just wobble every so often, and you just want someone to slip and then to do something absolutely nuts, and call it a novelty, I don't care, but just give us something mad, you know, and just I'm just hopefully you just like blow our minds with just how stupid you can be, you know, go full in stupid, please. I'd love to see what they can do.
Yeah, I would like that, but I'd like it to be for the masses, because a lot of the stuff they do is just for people who are like elite of the elite of the elite, and it's like, no, do something crazy but that everyone can enjoy. So you're right,
I'm sure there's an off catalogue that's, you know, literally got like a mad, you know, it's probably like, you know, Salvador Dali's mad box of tricks inside there or something, you know?
Yeah, that would be good. Cool, Zach. So you're going to go through the ones that you like from Watches and Wonders, and you can go and crack the pronunciations.
Yeah. I'm going to struggle with this, though. Please pardon me in advance, guys. Luckily, I was rambling on a bit about the Dumont, so I will save us a bit of time with just what I picked, which was just one. We were speaking about Cartier, and we're speaking about the tank Goucher. I feel like Cartier's revival of the Goucher was my favorite release. It has a perfect blend of vintage charm but then also modern minimalism. I feel like it's like a super unique watch that displays time through two windows instead of a traditional hands. And it makes it both understated yet bold. The new bottles come in the yellow gold, the rose gold, the platinum, and striking limited edition with a quirky dial layout, powered by the new hand wound movement, and paired with elegant leather strap. The Tank Goucher stands out for its historical significance, which you all know, and mechanical beauty. And I feel like Cartier have absolutely nailed it. I feel like the design is super refined. And yeah, great nod to the vintage kind of Goucher. So yeah, I kind of feel like I looked at many of the pieces, but when I saw this piece that came out through the press, I looked at the kind of dial, well, not the dial, but I could have looked at the kind of the watch face, and it looked amazing. I think it was in rose gold, and it coupled with that kind of green crocodile strap, and it might have been the crocodile strap that 70% won the watch over for me, but it definitely grabbed my attention. But also seeing that kind of historical watch coming back was definitely my winner. How about you, Chris? Do you have the same kind of note, or would love to kind of hear what kind of pieces you
can? What was yours? What was your favorite for Watches and Wonders?
That was my favorite as well.
Nice.
There was many jumping hours that we saw on the run up to Watches and Wonders. There was obviously the Nikko, the main, which took obviously a lot of press and a lot of airways, and then there was obviously Fears and Bremont. And I think Cartier kind of, say what you like, they are the daddy. You know, let's just be honest. That style, that design, the layout of the dial is, you can see that being replicated by many other brands, and obviously them putting their own little fingerprint on it. But again, I would have loved to have seen that at a more accessible price point rather than it being Absolutely. A precious metal. And this is where the madness comes in. It would have been amazing if Cartier did that in titanium. You know, that's like, you would never expect that from Cartier, you know, or ceramic or something daft, you know, shove a couple of emojis on one of the date wheels just to have a giggle. You know, that's kind of what I'm wanting from Cartier, just to kind of go, hey, you know, we might be really proper, but we're also pretty cool. So yeah, I'd love to have seen that in a more accessible price range. I think that would have just put a full stop to 2025 in the watch world. But unfortunately, we are, as peasants, are not entitled to such a timepiece.
But you're talking yourself out of a job, though. You know, you need to say, I will do the dial for you. That's what you need to say. Oh, so they can buy, people can buy their Cartiers.
Oh, yeah, no. Unfortunately, there is no dial. That's a problem. But you can imagine that you can do some incredible hand engravings on that front, on that piece of metal. So, yeah, there's lots of opportunities for people with deep enough pockets to do some incredible stuff, but I wish it just came in steel or titanium. That would have been awesome. But what do I know? Yeah. You know.
See, I love Cartier, and this podcast is about why we love watches, and it's not meant to be like gotcha or why we hate things and that kind of stuff. You know, other people can do that. It's just about love of watches. But you know what? I did not like the gear shape. I don't know why. It just, and I love Cartier. Was there two versions? Because one felt like it was slightly at an angle with its jump hour, and then the other was more sort of straight lines. And I don't know. I wanted to see more of the dial. Right, it was sort of teasing us. And I know it's historic, and I like history, and I wish all watches would go back. Watch brands would go back into their history and bring things up. You know, for the modern day, so that's be commended. But I don't know, it just didn't sing to me like others. But I think I'm in a minority. So I'm just going to leave that there. And I'm sure people in the comments can say, Tim, you're utterly wrong. And that's absolutely fine. But yeah, it didn't sing to me like others. But yeah, maybe I need to sort of, you know, hit myself afterwards. But yeah, I love Cartier, but it just didn't speak to me in the way that others have before. But there we go. Right, should we do watches we're lasting after? I think, Zach, you're up first. So what is the watch that has got you, you know, in a hot flush this month?
Yeah, definitely. So I feel kind of bad because we've just been kind of like talking about Cartier.
Keep going.
Sorry. But yeah, so for me, it's the Cartier Tressage. Probably butchered that too. But I thought it was a stunning watch. I kind of feel like usually we come to Watches of Wonders and we have a look at what's come out there, and we kind of see, you know, iterations of like the same watch, or, you know, things that haven't really stepped out and that are quite, you know, not very unconventional. But when I looked at the Tressage, that really stood out to me. I mean, I feel like Cartier is the best at combining jewelry with watchmaking.
I was going to say, it looks like a piece of jewelry. And just to jump in, if I may, obviously Cartier have got that exhibition at the Victoria and Albert that's just opened. Yeah. So we have to go to that as well. But you're absolutely right. It looks more like jewelry, but it's incredible. Yeah, continue. But yeah. I thought I'd sort of mention that and shout out to the exhibition they've got on at the V&A.
No, absolutely. And I think Charles, who was on here that on the podcast, went there.
Yeah,
Charles
Till,
he was there, and I saw he had a little segment there, so it looks interesting. So we definitely have to check that
out.
Oh,
nice. But, we'll do.
But yeah, I feel like Cartier nailed it with the kind of jewelry and watchmaking combination. I love the bold design. I love the mix of innovation as well as Cartier's timeless elegance. So that has to be the number one kind of watch that I'm lusting over at the moment. And and that's also from Watches of Wonders. But yeah, that's it for me. How about yourself? How about yourself, Tim?
Oh, I'm just looking at the Zahrab storyboard, and it's a very bad pun, but I'm going to say it anyway, and it wasn't intentional. So I have been madly in love with the Mad 2 from MB&F. That's a very terrible inverted dad joke. But I didn't really like the brand because you can never bloody read the time. You can't tell the time with them. They're just insane. But with this one, you can actually tell the time. So that's like a big bonus. Mm. And I just fell off the deep end. Like, I literally for a whole month, all my reels were just that watch, whether it was the green or the orange. I even put myself in for the raffle, and my wife will thank me I was not successful, because that would have been perhaps a bit of a waste of money. But there you go. Like I said, my feed had tens, dare I say hundreds, of stills and reels of this incredible like spinning action of the dial. I adore John Power at the best of times, but sort of the way it riffs off that, I think, is outstanding. And I know people say unique an awful lot, but this is a unique watch. Incredible. The green dial for me, beautiful. I love green dials, as you know, like I've got with my Oris. Wasn't sold on the orange, but again, I'm not part of that, you know, MB&F family. But yeah, I just thought it was absolutely brilliant. If it comes out in more colours, then even better. But Chris, I don't know if we think of Zach's watch that he's lusting after, or my sort of Mad 2 that I mentioned just now.
I think they're both incredible pieces. I mean, I haven't seen that Cartier before, so that's a first. But they are they are incredible about combining those kind of two genres of, you know, wearable jewellery that combines horology. That's they've done that so well for so long. So yeah, that's incredible. The Mad 2, I've had the opportunity to try them on. Beautiful watches.
Oh, wow.
Beautiful watches. Yeah. So, but yeah, it's not my style. So I get the madness, shall we say. but I just didn't take to it as much as I thought it would. But the ones that I've kind of, fallen in love with, and it's maybe it's just my kind of journey through the watch world, it's kind of, I'm actually lusting over a lot of the more, dare I say, accessible pieces rather than unobtainable pieces. I don't know why. But the new Christopher Ward Loco, I think, is incredible. Not actually seen it in the metal, but I think what they're doing as a brand is, someone needs to study that, because they're doing an incredible job there. And what they're pulling out of kind of their design house and what they're offering at the price point they're offering is just insane, I think. So there's that. And then it's the 39mm Norcane Wild one has got me feeling all good inside. Whether it's I think it's a combination of the colors, it's kind of maybe the skeleton movement, it's whatever it might be. I'm looking at that. I do wish they came in the same kind of turquoisey teal that the 42mm came in. But maybe future iterations might have it. But the 39mm, because I mean, my 39mm fits me so well that when I saw that, I was like, oh my God. And then the colors, I'm like, and so yeah, I'm going up to the Glasgow Watch Show on Saturday. And oh, I think brilliant. there's James Porter and Sons, who's the, you know, an incredible mm-hmm. watch dealer in Glasgow. So they stocked them. So I'm going to try my best to somehow get into that shop before my time runs out and try one on if they have them. But yeah, so those are my lusts at the minute.
Oh, brilliant, brilliant. I'm sure if you just sort of, you know, rang ahead, they would do something like that and nice for you. So
oh yeah, I know Simon. Yeah. I'll speak to Simon.
Yeah.
Just give me a sounds VIP good. To lock the doors. Yeah, lock in.
Absolutely. Let no one else in. Yeah. Very good. Cool. So should we pivot to Insta shots of the month? So I'll go first, and I can never just pick one. But, you know, it's people creating these great shots, right? And I want to show them off and showcase them. It's not just Zach and I talking. It's how brilliant people on Instagram are, you know, creating and curating these shots. So obviously it was recently Easter. So, you know, happy Easter to those that celebrated. So I've got picked a few of those. Why not? So she's well known on Instagram, both for superb photography and she has a fellow podcast. And that's obviously Lydia from Lydia's Watches. And again, we'll flash it up on screen. But she really captures the Easter egg theme with sort of a hatching orange dialed sort of Rolex Oyster Perpetual sort of popping out of an equally orange egg. Some ways it could be more Jurassic Park than sort of Easter. But I'm really liking sort of the trail of eggshell sort of blurred in the background as well to give that added depth. You know, as a photographer, you'd expect that sort of quality from her. And then next up, keeping with sort of a chocolatey theme, Timo.T1 with his sort of beautiful green dialed Grand Seiko Genby Valley. Again, a watch I really like. And it's very similar to the purple Kiri I mentioned earlier. To it sprung forth from an eggshell, or perhaps rather devoured by Timo himself, probably after he took the shot. I think it's more perhaps Kinder Surprise sort of collaboration with Grand Seiko, maybe I could get behind, who knows. excellent lighting effect on the photo as well. So I think really, really top job. So just moving away from Easter and eggs, this is a shot from Watch Daddy 365, and it's a macro of a Zenith Chronomaster. And as people know, I wasn't the biggest fan of Zenith like Zach is, but what I love about this is it captures the sub-dials and sort of trims the shot just at the right angles, and how sort of the sub-dials nudge and slightly overlap one another is a really neat design feature of the watch. It's sort of very subtle and sort of distinct color wheel as well. You know, it's got gray, light gray with a light blue, and it's sort of topped off with sort of like, you know, the red timing hand as well. And it's got really great finishing, you know, that circular finishing, the azurish sort of one with the multiple concentric circles, and it adds sort of this great depth to it. And as people know, I dislike sort of asymmetrical things. So the date window that it's got, which destroys the symmetry and therefore bad, is not in the shot for me. So that's why I quite like it. And then finally for me, short shout out, not part of Insta Shots of the Month, but just a shout out to a friend and sort of recent guest of the show, Ji Wang, and her sort of quality sort of watch art that she does. One of her latest attempts is of the Hermes Arceau Lieu de la Lune. And it's something I've never seen before, actually, as a watch. And I love the Hermes Quantien Perpetual Calendar, which I know James Kibble still has in his shop, which I'd love to see at some point. And I know Hermes isn't necessarily seen as a watch brand solely, but I've been really drawn to their watches recently. And the Arceau is just simply incredible. And the way Ji captures it with sort of the different textures and colors, as well as sort of the sense of movement she brings with it, you know, in terms of the watch itself, is actually a work of art. It's double moon phasing and the curved lugs are a neat touch as well. And again, do check out her work. You know, she's incredible. And we're really sort of grateful she came to our podcast a few months ago. So I'll stop there. I mean, Zach, what do you think of these and what are your favorite shots of the month? And then we'll get Chris to sort of give a bit of a comment and then perhaps pick a winner to get our wonderful beer mat of the timekeepers. So Zach, over to you. What do you think of those and what are your shots of the month?
Sure thing. I kind of feel like when it comes to this segment of the show, Tim always seems to outdo me, but I kind of feel like it's probably because you have a bit of a photography background somewhat, and I clearly don't, but as you can tell. But I feel like these shots are really, really incredible. I quite like the kind of Easter theme, really creative from Lydia Watches, with that kind of OP within the egg, within the cracked egg. Also Timo's shot was a great shot. I love that kind of the watch kind of sitting in the egg, and I think it's just the head of the watch, which is really creative. Also, Zhi Wang, as you know, one of our guests on the show, incredible. I love how that Delalune looks like it's in motion, and I love it's kind of like it's almost like it's almost still, like just finished, has that look of just being finished, which is really cool. It kind of brings us along on that process of that being done. Also, big fan of Zenith, so love that shot from Watch Daddy 365, and what a great name as well. I love those sub dials of different colors and how they layer over, and it's kind of captured a great part of that watch. And yeah, I'm a huge fan of Zenith Chrono, so yeah, I'll definitely be looking at those. I'm not sure if they're in my price range, but yeah, definitely great.
But not the date window on the Zenith, Zach, because why would you put a date window between the 4 and the 5? It's just stupid. There we go. I had to get that one in.
Yeah. That's your worst nightmare.
Just why put a date window anywhere? Anyway, keep going.
But I'll move on to my choices as well. So first is from _1_5_1_8_. And it's, I think they're based in Monaco. I believe they're an auction house, and it's of a Patek Philippe, moon phase, nice. Watch, mega watch, rose gold case, a kind of like salmon pink dial. Also has the little date windows as well, day and date.
That's acceptable.
Yeah,
it's in the right place. Inoffensive.
And then also, I kind of like how every other kind of hour marker is kind of like a rose gold stud rather than a numeral. That's quite a cool little touch. The size is perfect. I'm not too sure the size of this watch specifically. I know Chris has mentioned a few 39s. This looked like that could be within that region.
It looks small. It looks small. Yeah. Could be like 34 maybe, honestly.
Yeah.
It looks really small.
Yeah. But yeah, let's just say under 40 mil, which is kind of the sweet spot, I reckon. That's a great looking watch. And the shot is amazing because I like kind of the outfit. Yeah. The outfit paired with it just enhances, the beauty of the watch. So that's my first kind of tip.
Yeah, grey and pink go well together. So that's very good.
And especially in that formal kind of wear with the hand tucked into the trousers, it's a shot super well. Then I'll move on to my second, which is, I don't know, probably a favourite of I know Tim was kind of fond of this watch.
I love it.
Yeah, the 18K white gold case, Andy Warhol, paired with that hypnotic tiger eye stone dial. Kind of like a retro luxe energy the watch kind of gives. Bit of a 70s look with a bit of 2025 polish. And I feel
it's
like
not cheap though, is it?
Yeah, I mean, 18K white gold, I think that says a lot, isn't it? That says everything, exactly. So, this is kind of a watch that can be shot anyhow and still look magnificent. So, yeah, this is a shot from watch collecting lifestyle. And, I don't think I need to say any more on that. I think it just looks stunning.
So, Chris, what do you like? And you have the honours of picking a winner. So, to get the beer map. So, no pressure, right?
No pressure at all. I mean, I think they're all incredible. I mean, I'm not a photographer by any means, so I am always in awe and kind of impressed with how these people kind of pull these incredible shots out. So, they're all stunning. I mean, it's, but I might go with my fellow artist just because it's a fellow artist and go with.
I'll let you pick another one because she's a friend of the show. She's already got all our merch, so we've already pushed it. She's not allowed. Yeah, exactly.
Maybe Lydia then, because it's the combination of the orange and the orange egg is well constructed.
Yeah, it's very good. Like I said, it's more Jurassic Park, I think, than Easter. Yeah, but I still
If you go Jurassic Park, then you got Awake with their incredible dials. If you're not too sure, have you seen the Jurassic Park dials they've pulled out recently?
No.
Need to look into the French brand Awake. They lovely guys, but they've spent a long time creating these dials with a Vietnamese lacquer department, and I think it's the same people that do all the work for Hermes. So they've basically created these dials with a lot of texture, so it's a silver leaf, and then they build up I think like 20-30 layers of lacquer, and they've created a velociraptor and a T-Rex inspired dial. So we look at those, they're beautiful though.
Definitely
beautiful watches.
Yeah, we'll flash something up on the screen when I edit this, but I wasn't aware of it, so no, this is why we do the show, we learn all the time, so that sounds really cool. Brilliant.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Cool. So shall we go to sort of the main part of the show, one of the bits I love best, and that is going to be the questions, Chris, that we've got for you. So I'll go first. And so what made you turn sort of what I seem to think might be a hobby into a business? I was doing a bit of sort of deep dive into your background before. So obviously you haven't always done this. So what made you take the leap, and how did you get here would be my opening question.
For sure. So my background is in art design. So I was a lecturer in design for many, many, many years. Had a passion for watches when I was a wee kid, but that kind of tailed off as you kind of grew up and went through kind of teenage life. And then it must have been about 10 years ago. And I got back into watches and kind of started with Seikos and just found a fondness and a love for the SKX 007. And that was a time when, A, they were available, they were cheap, and the modding world was very immature, shall we say. Kind of not wanting to kind of have something that was the same, I decided to kind of see what I can change, and you can change hands and change bezels, but that was probably where it stopped. So I thought I'll just see if it was possible to paint a dial and do that myself. And I did. I used kind of the style, the graffiti urban art style that I love, and kind of painted a very, I think it's still like one of the first images on my Instagram, like the first kind of attempt of some sort of abstract artwork, very badly done, looking back at it now. But that was my first watch kind of I painted. It was an SKX 013, so it was a turtle. I'm gonna get shot for that. It was S something else, but it was a turtle. So and that was my first ever watch that I painted, and I shoved it on a Reddit, and that then blew up, really. To the long and short of it, it kind of caught wildfire, and got more and more requests, and did more and more abstract work, and then started to do some more fine art work, and then basically said yes to everything, not really knowing how to do it. I figured out, you watch lots of programs. I knew, traditional paints like acrylics were not acceptable because of how they would last and dials. So you kind of figured out you had to use enamels and all these kind of things. So that's kind of what I kind of figured out along the way, painted lots of kind of scrap dials. It just got to the point where I was working with IFL watches, and that became a huge thing, to the point that I was able to then quit my very stable, easy job in the sense of kind of just my 9-to-5 and take this up full time. And that's been 5 years since then. So, yeah.
Yeah, well, hats off to you. We're like good entrepreneurs here. So, well done. I mean, did you have a business plan then? Because it sounds like you just said yes to everything, and that was the business plan, right?
I still don't have a business plan.
Okay. I'm envious. I remember when I had my small business that I set up, I had to have like an 18-month business plan. I had to go to investors and justify every penny and that kind of stuff. And obviously they gave me the money eventually, but it sounds like what you did was incredible. So like I said, hats off to you.
No, thank you. I've never had spoken to investors. I've never had anybody invest, and everything's built by the ground up by myself. So yeah. I've had the incredible support of my wife throughout the whole process, which is, you can't do everything by yourself. So that's been instrumental into the success. But no, it's like, you find a passion, you find that you feel as if you're getting more reward out of that than your other job. And then you just try and figure out what you can do to push that forward and push yourself forward in a way that you don't make an ass of yourself is the simplest way. I mean, to be very blunt about it, I mean, I've known that I've worked in many different industries. And it looks massive on the outside, but when you're actually in the industry, it is so small. Yeah. And I think people probably don't realize that, even with the watch world, that you can probably put on one WhatsApp group, 40, 50 people that make the watch world tick, and if you do things with honesty, if you do things for the sake of what you're trying to do in terms of provide an art-based service, that you're trying to enhance stuff rather than screw things up, or you're trying to kind of put your own little take on it, I think that's been accepted. It wasn't an overnight success by any means, but I think, the grinds worked and the grinds paid off, that you be honest and you keep working away at it, and before you know it, you are slowly accepted into the world. I'm very grateful to work to be in the position that I am.
Yeah, no, that sounds really good. Again, lots people consume lots of things. It's easy to consume things, right? But to produce something, especially something that somebody wants, is a totally different skill, and it's very, very hard. So it's commendable that obviously you'll be able to sort of produce these things, and obviously people want them. So very good. I think Zach, you've got the next question.
I do. Thanks, Chris. You kind of bundled the two kind of questions into one, which is amazing.
Sorry.
It's really nice. No, it's fantastic. And it's really nice to hear kind of like someone who's started to do something that they're passionate about and then things just kind of aligning. So that's really inspirational to hear as well. My question for you is, what sort of materials do you use throughout the process? You
say? Sure.
And also tools as well. Like what kind of things, as well. So yeah, not just like the lacquer and that kind of stuff, but I'm really fascinated in terms of, is it just like a dentist chair worth of like all these tools that you have that you sort of like work on, just fascinated to know more.
To be honest, I think I may be doing it wrong. And the only reason why I say that is because when you go to Watches and Wonders, they're all in lab coats, right? And they've all got these high-tech Leica cameras and microscopes and this and that. And I'm sitting there with a loop in one eye, bouncing down, breaking my back. But it's the way that I did have this little microscopic camera that would show you, that would zoom right in. It was like a 30-time magnification. It was wonderful. It really got you nice and close in. I also found that, you could spend, I spent, I think it was a whole day painting this one area of this dial on this microscope. And I thought, I've nailed it. And I looked back and I looked at that and you couldn't even see it. It was so small. I was like, what a waste. So there's a wee bit of realism that I've learned over the years that it's like, there's small and then there's too small, but I digress. So, most of the, obviously I use what you call cold enamels. So these are non-fired enamels, which is, I think, the essential part to ensure that the color is a vibrant and it sticks to the application that you're doing. The big thing is that you can't really, if you make a mistake, that's you've made a mistake. You can't really erase things from a dial. And I think that's one thing that you have to be confident enough in doing. Paintbrushes, you buy the smallest one you can online and then you modify it, really. You know, so I use sometimes
Modding the materials as well. Yeah, absolutely. Sounds incredible.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think you can go down to like, you know, even a they grade them in numbers, so you can get like a 10-0, which is like a super fine paintbrush, but then you can go to 50-0, which looks like a couple of strands of hair. And you might need to take a scalpel to that and refine it even more. So there's those. Sometimes you use, depending on the actual dial surface, you can get away using scalpels and very fine blades to help, you know, do kind of a subtractive process in the painting. So you can apply paint, and then through that process, you can remove elements to bring different colors to the fro. But it's very basic. It's not luxurious. I wish I could say that I have a lab coat and I have a 20-gallon Leica camera. But no, I think this is actually, here is my loop. With a comfortable band around my head that doesn't hurt my head anymore. So a modified loop as well, you know, so this is it. This is all you need.
And you, I like this, like Top Gear challenge. I love it. How you're using all these materials to create this amazing thing. It's brilliant.
So yeah, so that, I mean, that is as glamorous as I've gotten these days, is going back to basics, actually, you know, going away from these high tech things. But yeah, so that, and then, like I said, it's various tools. So paintbrushes, you can sometimes use some peg wood to help you apply things. But it's a slow process. I know that there's some artists out there which are doing some incredible things where they time lapse stuff. But I think if you look close enough, there's huge jumps and gaps to when the recording is, you know, they draw something and then there's this huge jump where the background is all painted. You didn't see that process. So that's because the paints we use take literally days and days to dry. So yeah, it's a process. It's a long process.
Awesome. Cool. Cool. Have I got the next one, Zach?
Yeah, I think you do. Yeah.
Cool. So yeah, I'm quite keen just to know, like, what is your favorite brand to work, not necessarily with, but like on, and why? Like, you mentioned that the Seikos, but do you have particular watch brand where you're like, I just want to work on those, they're incredible. But just fascinated to know whether it's that kind of thing that drew you in.
I would unfortunately say there isn't a brand, there's probably more of a style of dial. And that's probably, I do like classic watches. So as much as Cartier is a perfect classic dress watch, they're really complicated to work with because of the Roman numerals to paint around them. So it's wonderful to work with. And you look at those like fine lines in the Roman numerals, you're thinking, oh my gosh, this is a nightmare to try and paint around. But classic watches, like I've painted a couple of vintage AM Audemars Piguets, which are beautiful to work on. I know Rolex is a classic one to say, but they are really nice watches to work on and paint. So it's those kind of where the hour markers are very subtle. So the painting can stand out more compared to, you know, if I even think about Seikos and dive watches, they normally have, you know, applied large white dotted indices, which can kind of detract from the artwork, so to speak. But you know, it's what it all depends on the artwork that you're trying to paint, I suppose.
Yeah, I was going to ask just a follow-up that just popped into my head. So I suppose these dials are like canvases, therefore does the canvas feel different, do the dials feel different when you work on them then, so therefore you have to adapt your style?
Yeah, it means there's, you know, if you have a waffle dial or a texture dial, that completely transforms the way in which you work. Sometimes when you do paint, you flood the dial, so to speak, with color, so you can actually put a lot of kind of thinners and kind of additives into the paint, which allows it to create these watercolor style effects or to blend colors. And you have waffle dials and you drop paint on it just kind of goes and it runs off in all these different crevices. So you've got to, every day is a learning curve, and every day is a school day, so to speak. So I would say that Grand Seiko are a pain in the bum, if I'm being honest with you, because especially their black dials, because they're matted. So you do anything wrong, and it's like if you got the slightest bit of dust on the Grand Seiko matte black dial, you've got to be so careful how you remove it, because if you touch it, then you've kind of scuffed the matte effect of the dial, and you're knackered. So I've learned that one the hard way. Every dial is different. All fun to work with, all have the different characteristics, but yeah.
Cool. I think, Zach, you got the next question.
Awesome. Yes, I do have the next question. So, what have you not yet worked on that you'd like to work on, and why?
Tech. Just because. Yeah, just to do something fun, you know. And overwork. That would be fun, you know.
Yeah, good choices.
They're, I'd love to do something a bit mad in a mad watch. I think that'd be fun.
Yeah,
I think. I don't like the Nautilus or the Cupertus, so you can crack on and make those look pretty, because they need that. But the Calatrava, I don't know. It's almost like a holy watch that can't be trusted.
It's incredible. Like when you do paint a watch, someone else's reaction to someone else's watch is always incredibly amusing to me. You know, so you paint a watch and like, you've ruined that watch. How dare you? It's like, it's not your watch. Why do you care?
That's a good point. That's a good point. Very good. So, so I've got a question. So, but it's a little bit sort of long-winded, but I'm going to go for it anyway. So I have a Reverso, and I got one at the start of this year, and it's sort of a grail watch for me. Always wanted one. But I'd love one day to get the sort of, the case back, sort of, I suppose, using their sort of an enamel with sort of my favorite sort of art piece that I found and fell in love with. And obviously, Jaeger are sort of second to none, and the skill involved is of the absolute highest quality. But do you like what Jaeger do from like a professional perspective and how they do it for them? Just keen for you to sort of, say a bit more about sort of the things you appreciate as an artist yourself and perhaps how you draw inspiration from them.
Oh, absolutely. I think there's a couple. I think there's, I could probably count on one hand the enamelists who work in this industry, and there's probably more. And my naivety in terms of that knowledge is based on that. They are like hidden away behind doors, which is a shame, because it is, the method art is an incredible thing. But what they do is just phenomenal. I mean, absolutely phenomenal how they're able to achieve that. And the process in order to achieve that is a phenomenon. I've had the opportunity many years ago to go to Anne O'Dane's workshop in Glasgow and see them produce their enamel dials, and that was an incredible process to watch. And they only saw a very small stage of that, and the enamelists are true artisans. And then you hear the failure rate of their dials, and that is like 60-70% failure rate of a dial when they fire them, and that's a good failure rate. And it's the same with the artists that are producing these things for, the enameled hand-painted dials for Hermes and Louis Vuitton and Patek and all these people. It's the same process that they are producing so many, hoping that one doesn't crack in the kiln. And that just baffles my mind. And that's why you're paying the incredible premium for these watches. But I am an absolute awe of what they do. So I have the utmost respect for what they do, and I'd love to have the time to learn how to do that. But I don't think I have the patience or the sanity to spend, weeks and weeks painting for it to then just not happen. Yeah. I think that I would, I don't have any more hair to lose. So I'll back out of that one.
Very good. Because that's what I was going to say. Have you worked on a Cartier? A Jaeger. With the sort of blank canvas on the other side, and sort of worked on that, because that looks
not
incredible.
Yet. No. I've not worked on a JLC at all. So again, another Grail maybe to work on one day.
Yeah, No, definitely. They had like short videos, like very well sort of put together videos that they released last year about how they do their enamelling process. Now I was bowled away, but I think I have to save up and get mine done. But yeah, just looks incredible. Looks incredible.
Yeah, no, cool. Beautiful things.
So we'll have a bit of a break sort of asking questions, but I've got some favourites that you've done that you've put on Instagram that I'm sort of in love with. And obviously I sent them through just beforehand, so I'll flash them up on screen. But I mean, I first came to your work, I think, last year, and it was Oris, a brand I absolutely love. And it was obviously the 65 diver that you did. I love the indice colours, you know, from that range. And sort of the way you took that watch to the next level with the paint was amazing. I just sort of stopped dead at what I was doing. I was like, this guy is just doing a great job. But I wanted to ask really sort of what gave you the idea, right? That's because that's what I'm really interested in. We have all these people on the show, but I want to dig a bit deeper. Like you can't just come up with these ideas randomly. There must be something to it or behind it. So just, you know, what gave you the idea, and maybe talk through the design and how you came about it.
It's a great question. I mean, I remember that. So that was when I was with IFL, and we were looking to expand what we were doing. And we had great success with the same kind of idea and process with the Casios. And we wanted to figure out, like, what could we do next, or what's a good watch, or what was something that is affordable that we can kind of work on. And we kind of landed on the Oris. I think it was really at the time when, you know, the teal Tiffany colors were really, yeah, you know, really popular. And I did a Tiffany style dial on a Casio, and that went really, really well. So we just basically, it was very much a case of like, I have this idea, guys, why don't I do this effect with these colors on an Oris and see how that goes? So they sent me one. I think I was back in Scotland at the time, because I used to jump backwards and forwards to Sweden. Sent me one, painted it, and that was it. It was as simple, dare I say, as that. I just thought, I think I could do something fun with this. Let me just try this process and this technique. And that gave birth to this watch that was really a milestone for us at IFL to kind of work on a really big mechanical branded watch, which was great.
Yeah, like I said, I absolutely loved it. I mean, Zach, obviously, I sent the images over earlier, but, you know, we love Oris here as well. But did you really like that one too?
Yeah, I did have a look at that, and I thought it was really, really interesting. It kind of looks like, kind of looking at the dial, it kind of looks quite spacey to me, which is kind of, I don't know. I guess everyone's interpretation is slightly different, and that's kind of what makes it fun. But that's how it kind of came out to me. And yeah, I think it's a great, great playful take on a brand, enhancing the dial as well.
Cool. And then sort of another one that I really liked was obviously it's like that G-Shock, you know, sort of range that that you did, and it was the white one was sort of the multicolor, and I sort of call it like a string effect, again, really playful. But how did you sort of bring that idea to reality? That looks more complicated than the Oris. So I just, I don't know if you walk me through that process and sort of the trial and error involved, perhaps.
Yeah, no, again, so I mean, every day was when I was working, you know, with the guys there, was trying to, it was kind of a twofold thing. One was to try and make something fun and exciting, but also repeatable in a sense, because, you know, we were producing 250, 300 pieces per drop. Everyone was hand painted. And in order to do that, we had to find a way that I could do that successfully whilst keeping the same style. So I was continually trying different abstract techniques and different processes, trying to figure out what would work, what wouldn't work. And I kind of landed on this process of being able to create these very fine straight lines on a dial. And I was able to repeat that over and over and over again. And I kind of said, well, this kind of looks like madness. We called it the freak, because it just looks like a freak of color and a splinter of color. It took a while, and there was many times that I screwed the process up because of the way it has to be applied. I would then get so far, and maybe like the enamel dials, one color would just go bang. I'm like, oh, so yeah, we, I think that was a process, or that initiated the process of IFL becoming a G-Shock retailer. Believe it or not, so they became a retailer in G-Shock, and the reason for that is so that we could access their parts department and buy dials for the ones I screwed up.
That's a so, good story.
So yeah, there's
that's good. That's going in the captions.
Did you
make a specific tool to do that? You said, you know, the action of doing it, or did you find something that already there?
I won't give it away because they still do it, and I know that people still try and copyright. No, it's too. But I found a tool that gave me. But it's not just a tool. It's a method. It's an application method which you have to do to kind of get this. And it's a very. It's not even that. Like if I told you exactly what I used and how I did it, the third element is then the paint, and the paint isn't a usual enamel based paint. It's a combination paint of lacquers and certain additives to try and make it very fluid, but also dry quickly. Because if you get it wrong, then it could crack. So it's everything looks very simple, and I think that's the idea of what you want people to create. Want people to make it look simple, but in reality, it's quite a lot of developmental work to get to the point of making it look simple. So
I mean, you said 250-300, and we had Bjorn Altman, on the show last time, and obviously he got commissioned by a watch brand, sort of, you know, dig into their archives and do all those sort of, you know, animations and designs. And he basically said for 6 months he just like didn't sleep, and they didn't let him out. You know, do they just say, right, Chris, 250, here you go, and then they lock the door, and then you just got to do it, right? I mean, it just sounds insane. Yeah, I mean, like, how long did that take? It was just over 1,000, wasn't it, Zach? It was insane, and obviously it was a great opportunity for him to do that. Was Hoya, wasn't it? If I'm correct, so. Zach. Yeah, and it was their back catalogue, and it was again absolutely incredible stuff. But he just said morning, noon, and night. You know, just couldn't stop. So how long does it take you? Well, just 250 just seems insane.
Believe it or not, I was pumping out 100 watches a week.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
The crack in the whip then, right?
That's insane.
I think we calculated that in 1 year I produced over 6,000 individually hand-painted dials. So it broke me very quickly as well.
Yeah.
it was great, but at the same time, it was... so stressful, and it was very hard. I mean, it was unbelievably long hours every single day to try and get that done. And I eventually had somebody help me paint just the, you know, to help me disassemble watches and then paint on the bezel work, so to speak. So they painted all the bezels, which took a long time to do, and that took a process to figure that out. But yeah, we were producing roughly about 100 a week. At our peak, and that's a stupid amount. When I look back at it, I'm like, how did I do that?
Yeah.
You know, it sounds like really robot. Stupid, but it was an absolute machine. It was brutal. Yeah. It wasn't pretty. You know, it was. Yeah, I was a. Yeah, I wouldn't go back. Shall we say it was too much.
And were you on your own kind of thing? Like, is it you weren't just like locked in like a room, and or do you put like your favorite like album on or whatever and just crack through it? Or did you have to have like total silence? Like, just it's key to get into the mind of the artist really for doing that.
Obviously, like I said, I had somebody work with me to paint the bezels. I wasn't necessarily a horrible person, but I probably wasn't a very fun person to work with, shall we say. I can imagine that I was a bit of a grump. I was probably a bit hard, a bit unforgiving. I think the stress of that wasn't enjoyable. So I don't think I was the best version of myself during that time.
Well, creative types are allowed to, right?
Yeah. I wish I could hide behind that, but no, I think it was just a grumpy old man, to be honest.
Very good. And the next one I just wanted to pick out was, you know, we're huge Cartier fans here. If we said that already in this podcast, I think we've said it 10 times already. But I'm not sure I could sort of muster the courage to alter the purity of a Cartier. But nonetheless, the Gladiator design you did is, again, just crazy good. So again, was that the owner, the idea coming to you? I know maybe you can't portray like who, and I'm not asking those kind of questions, but you know, was it your idea? Was it their idea? Or did you have license to co-create that kind of thing? Is it, I want this, do it, Chris, or is it actually you have the freedom to make some changes and tweaks and that kind of thing?
Yeah, good question. And the story with that one was a client kind of got in touch with me and said, hi, I'd like to get some done. I've got a Cartier. What do you think we can do? And that kind of spiraled into a conversation about trying to figure out what was their interests or what did they have in mind. And that kind of started off with a more of a Spartan 300 style dial, playing on the whole Roman numerals, Romanesque kind of thing.
So that
allowed me to kind of create a couple of digital mock-ups and send them back, and we kind of ping backwards and forwards ideas. What about this and what about that? And then I kind of, you know, we landed on this image of this gladiator, and I said, what about this? And he goes, well, how would you see that? And I just kind of, I'd quickly edited the picture, and I, you know, took out the background and so forth. And I said, you know, it's like, this is like, you know, the Roman gladiator, the kind of the, you know, the icon of that era, you know, standing there ready to deliver the final blow, looking up at kind of, you know, the Caesar waiting for the thumbs up or thumbs down. And I said, what about if he looks up at the number one? You know, because there's only one person walking out of that arena. Why don't we make that one gold, you know? And then we could put gold on the helmet and gold. So he's, and he loved that idea. And it was all black and white just to kind of... So, yeah, it was a very... It's wonderful working with clients who allow that freedom as well as them coming back with ideas, because I've had lots of clients come up with ideas and I went, wow, that's really clever. And we've gone with that. So that was very much a collaborative process. So, yeah, it was really nice to do that one.
How long did that take to do, if I'm allowed to ask that?
I think from, I mean, if we took out the, you know, the gaps in between conversations, and I would say that probably maybe about a week and a half from starting to finishing, because the gold needed to settle and, you know, things. So yeah, probably about a week and a half of just slow, delicate painting.
When you said you did 100 a week before, I thought you were going to say half an hour. Just did him a lunch break. Oh, no. Just,
I wish.
Easy.
I wish.
Very good.
No,
very
good. You got to take your time. I mean, it's tiny little things, like, it sounds really daft, but even though the eyes or the facial detail, or even like the, like, I've spent way too long trying to paint that man's nipple. Just need to put that out there. I spent way too long painting man's nipple.
Zach, you know, we've got to put that in. That's going to be the leading bit on the podcast. How long does it take to paint a man's nipple?
How long does it take to paint a man's nipple?
A
nipple slip, you know, but you could, if you slip, and the thing is, like, it was so stupid. Like, if you put the, I can't believe I'm talking about but carry on.
There we go.
But if it was just the wrong gray, it looked like a boob. And if it was too light, it just didn't look right. So it was like paint it, let it dry, let it kind of cure. No, that looks wrong. Go back. So I must have spent about 2 days just trying to refine a nipple. But that will make or break the dial. Could you imagine the gladiator with the boobs? That's what it'd be known as.
Exactly.
You know, so you know,
and great artists throughout time, you know, paint these wonderful ladies with their, things hanging out and stuff, and that's works of art. So it's exactly the same thing.
Who knows how long Michelangelo spent painting willies, and, you know,
exactly.
Who knows,
I know. But,
you know,
so, yeah. No one's asked you to do that yet, right?
No. I would love to imagine Michelangelo looking at kind of the statue of David, kind of going, should I make it longer, shorter? What should we do? You know.
Very good. We have definitely digressed. Still keeping with Cartier. But for me, I really loved the Santos skeleton as a watch, one of my favorite ones. But how did you come up with the color scheme? And again, how long did it take, given that the dial's not really a dial, right? It's just the skeleton bits. So just, and also, did you paint the case on that one? Because the case looks like a different color than what I've usually seen. So I wanted to sneak that one in as well.
Yeah, sure. So that was in the ADLC version. So the case is black already. And believe it or not, the actual dial, it is a dial that Cartier make for that watch.
Okay.
So there is an element that comes completely off from the actual movement. So yeah, so it's like a sandwich. There's a movement and then the dial sits on top of that. So
I see. So you've got to disassemble it.
Yeah, so it is cut exactly the same shape as actual that core movement with all the numerals and everything like that, but it does come off. So I didn't have to touch the movement at all, which is great. And that was very much a case of I painted I can't remember what skeleton watch I painted previously, and I kind of had so much fun painting all the little individual elements and graffitiing it. And it's obviously, I mean, I'm not ashamed to say it, but it, you know, you look at the Congo watch from Richard Mille, that's a heavy influence on anybody that does that kind of thing, because he did such an amazing job. Not to use that as a guide, but it was more of a proof of concept for me that that looks cool if you do that kind of thing. So I just added my own style to that, and what you see is what you got. There wasn't any direction in colors or direction in what I did. I just kind of painted, added a bit here, changed a bit there, and just went with it until I thought it looked nice.
Was that for a client, or was that for your own sort of tried?
That was for my own watch, and then somebody asked me and gave me a price, and I sold it.
There you go. Of course, because it's got me this great idea, Zach. You know, you've got Xi with her wonderful artwork. You know, you've got Chris with his. You know, you've got Bjorn. You almost need like an exhibition to show this stuff off. You know, like in a museum or something. You could have all the artists of all different works together, because this stuff's, you know, incredible. And I'm sure there's people out there that would love to see this kind of stuff. Anyway, I digress a bit, but it's just like I said, these are all works of art. Right, I know we've eaten into a long time, but there were still things I wanted to sort of get through, and there's two for me. So it's the same watch, Omega Speedmaster. You know, you've got the subtle sort of paint splatter effect against the black dial, and for me, you know, Zach mentioned space. It's almost like a party in space. I think it's fantastic. You know, very apt, and I like the subtle change you did on the sub dial hands. Obviously, you've got the cyan, the magenta, the yellow. Can you explain how that came about? And then briefly, just again for time, the Speedmaster with the Batman symbol on the sub-dial, classic, again, you know, on the black. It takes me back to sort of the Michael Keaton Batman days. Maybe that's what you were going for, than perhaps, you know, the new Batman. And for me, would you make any more superhero designs? You know, my kids love Marvel. I want them to like DC more, so I'm trying to push that. And so what's the story behind those two watches? So you've obviously got the Speedmaster with the paint effect, and then obviously the Speedmaster with the Batman symbol.
So the Speedmaster was very much like I came up with this being able to apply paint in very, very, very tiny little dots of color. So I called that a galaxy effect. So it just kind of looked like you're looking up at a night sky, or you're floating around a galaxy and you're looking at multiple galaxies and multiple stars. So that was kind of the inspiration. And obviously it's the Speedmaster and the Moon Watch, so it kind of worked in really well. And the hands, I just wanted the CMYK colorway. So the cyan, magenta, yellow, and the black over the actual watch. I thought that kind of worked well as more of a taking a fun graphic-y, design-y kind of inspiration behind it. So that's the specific reasons why those hands are like that. So that was that inspiration. The Speedmaster with the Burton 1989? Is that right? 1989.
I think so.
So that was for a client. He had two watches, actually. So this one, and then it was a Tudor, and the Tudor has a Spider-Man kind of design.
Oh, there we go.
And this one was because each watch was for his son. Son that he was growing up, I think they were quite young, so I think they were under five, so is mad about Batman. So this is his Speedmaster when he grows up. So we did that kind of classic.
Not when he's five, because that will not survive.
No, not at all. It can survive space, but not a five-year-old.
Yeah, not a five-year-old. They should advertise it like that.
So that was the inspiration to the classic Burton. Yeah, I think that is like the pinnacle Batman symbol. And then you might not be able to see it, but if you do look in really, really hard at the 6 o'clock subdial, there are tiny little dots of loom that I added that only show the black light, and that is his son's star sign. So you can just see it. Some people kind of thought, oh, this looks like you made a mistake. And I'm like, no, that's what it is. So that was the two inspirations. So it's more a case of my son likes Batman, what can we do? And my son likes Spider-Man, what can you do? And that's kind of what we landed on. So it was nice,
that's nice.
Nice subtlety. And I think that's the, excuse me, that's the kind of more of the artistic element coming in where you kind of try and work, I say this, it's such a silly saying, but I like it. You work with the dial instead of against the dial. So you utilize the elements that add without subtracting. And so just adding a wee sub-dial image, it works. You know it works on Speedmasters. Omega has done it with Snoopy and other emblems that they've added things to this kind of the 9 o'clock sub-dial. So why break something that's not fixed? It works well, so we decided to put it in there and still make it functional, you know.
Very good. Yeah, like I said, I've got two sons and obviously got another child on the way, and I obviously want to get them into watches so I can keep buying my own watches, right? So it's justification. That's what I tell the wife anyway. But yeah, I'm trying to get him to DC, and he likes, was it Martian Manhunter? That probably a bit harder one to pull off than the bat symbol, but maybe you'll get a commission from me soon for some DC goodies and baddies. I think that'd be very good. So
awesome.
Cool. I've talked a lot there, but Zach, have you got some choices as well? So I need to leave time for you as well. But I had to get those off my chest because I thought they were really incredible.
I think Tim's been a bit greedy there. I think he's
very. sorry.
No, rightfully so. It's been really interesting, kind of like hearing in depth about certain ones you've kind of created, some of your masterpieces. Mine is just two. So first, I think it was a creation that you made for Neil, and it was a Judah Pelagos. I'd love to hear a bit more about that, like the process behind that, what he came to you with, the idea, concept, execution.
Yeah, sure. I mean, so Neil's a lovely bloke. So we had a very long kind of conversation and kind of lots of back and forth in the initial kind of stages. But the inspiration came from his father was a draftsman. So he remembers growing up that his dad will bring home big, huge kind of A0 size drawings of the engineering diagrams that he was drafting. So that's a very traditional blueprint. You know, that's where the name came from. So he wanted something that kind of was as a sentimental piece that was inspiration of his father, but he wanted a quirky side to it. So we kind of came up with this idea of, well, why don't we change names and why don't we make it fun and why don't we add some proper symbols in? What you see now, the finished piece is probably maybe iteration 20 that we came up with, maybe even more.
Oh, wow.
It went really, really, really in depth of, you know, I drew out all kind of the movement onto the dial, changed names that then transformed to a couple of gears. So we really went full send, so to speak, on a dial in terms of adding things, and that then slowly kind of navigated it away from movement. So there's only a few movement elements, you know, between the 10 and 11 there's a little kind of recessed piece, and so there's only a couple of little screw heads here and there or kind of little draftsman symbols. But then we decided to kind of play about with it and change names around. And, you know, it's like Pelagos. I didn't even know what Pelagos meant. So I Googled it. It means sea. So then said, why don't we just put that on it? He's like, brilliant. I didn't know that, you know. And, you know, he wanted, and also he was keen to have a left-hand drive. And I'm thinking, it should be possible if the dial turns around, because some dials, their feet aren't as symmetrical, and this literally just picked up, turned it around and shoved it on, and it worked perfectly. So we were very lucky in that sense. So we wanted to kind of add that, and obviously Tudor's not Rolex, so you know, we wanted to put that on the dial. So yeah, it was an amalgamation of lots of back and forth collaborative ideas to get to where that was. So it was a wonderful thing, and it was so well received. And that's the whole point of it. It was loved, very much loved.
Wow, that's really cool. It's really cool to hear about that, because just having a look at it, it looks really I love the look of it, you know. So it's really interesting to hear the different elements that kind of created it or was part of creating it. And I feel like you said you kind of had loads of parts. It kind of looks like you reached a perfect point of having enough on the dial, but then not you know, going overboard with cluttering the DAW. So
yeah,
there was also another piece, and it was the Tudor Harrods. I suppose was that kind of a similar one? Correct me if I'm wrong, but is that another one of Mills' watches, or was it somebody else? And
it was for a client in America, actually, who obviously I think they obviously maybe like the UK. So this one, again, they wanted to, you know, have the Harrods symbol on that because it is a Harrods edition. And I did some very subtle things. So I didn't, you know, the one thing I said to Neil is like, I'm not going to repeat or replicate his design, but people are wanting something similar. And so, excuse me. So, you know, change it for, you know, not Rolex, cross out to Geneva. But what we decided to do, instead of the, you might not be able to see it so well, but instead of putting screw heads, I put, it's a more of an abstract London underground symbol. So that's what those little things are. If they are little underground abstract symbols. It's a subtle take on the same kind of idea, still having fun.
Wow. Brilliant execution. And Harrods on a Harrods Tudor. Makes sense. It makes sense.
Yeah. Awesome. It was missing, shall we say.
Absolutely, yeah. Now I can't unsee it almost. It almost just works there, isn't it? Like, it's meant to be there.
That's great. Brilliant. That's great. Zach, do you want to go with the next question? We'll go back to we've got a few more questions and then we'll wrap it up.
Yes, I can head back to the question. So do you have an idea of a design before you start, or do you go with the creative flow?
Designs, ideas can come very quickly. So there has been a couple of occasions where it has taken a long time to come up with something. But in more often than not, if a client comes to me and says, I want something, or gives me a blank watch, I will hand a blank watch back to them, you know. And the reason for that is my style and what I love may not be what they want. They are the ones who are wearing this. It needs to be personal to them. I just need the smallest bit of inspiration from them. You know, would you have a favorite sport or a favorite team or a memory or a place? Anything like that is enough for me to kind of go, and I can then come up with a whole bunch of ideas. But if they just kind of go, do something for me, I'm like, I can post it back to you, you know. I don't like that. Creative freedom is wonderful, but with criteria, shall we say?
Yeah, that.
Yeah, the owner and the artist. Yeah, the commissioning person and the artist. Yeah. Very good. So hear me out. I've got tattoos. I think you might have tattoos as well, Chris. You know, could watch customization be described as getting a tattoo for your watch? You know, it's personal, meaningful, to show individuality, or am I just barking up the wrong tree?
No, I think that's very apt. I think personalization is what we all want in this world. Whether we like to admit it or not, I think that's, you know, if we think about it, we personalize our houses, we personalize our cars. I think we personalize the way we dress. I think, you know, a watch should not be left out of that equation in my eyes. Why, you know, if for a man, dare I say, this is not to be gender biased, but for a man, it potentially is, apart from a wedding ring, if you are married, the only piece of jewelry that you might wear.
Exactly.
For many it is, and it is a very personal piece of jewelry. You know, you it's a memento. It's an artifact that you carry with you in life. It goes through you for different stages, especially if you have something that you've bought or you immortalize in the memory of, say, a graduation piece or a wall set, my son's birth, or whatever it might be. And it's a kind of a reassurance, you know. It doesn't tell lies, shall we speak. You know, if you set it and you wind it, it's a friend, it's an honest friend, so to speak. So I think to maybe have that tell you something a wee bit more about yourself is a good thing. I think we love patina on watches because that shows our worn-in vibe on a watch. So look at the patina I've created on that dial that I have created over the years that I have worn it. It's like, you're not going to get a patinaed modern watch. You're not. Yeah. It's not going to happen. So personalizing it, whether it's very something bold or very something subtle, I think is a healthy thing. And I don't think that should be under the realms of stupid or senseless if it is a piece of if it is a watch you're going to keep forever. And I think that probably, dare I say, in the last 5 years with the surgence of the grey market, I think there's a lot of people that maybe are in the watch industry that aren't collectors, and they see that as a waste of investment. Whereas I think people who do come to me see it as, well, I'm not buying this, but it's not an investment piece, it's a generational piece. So yeah, you always get those people that think that what you're doing is just destroying a watch, and it's like, well, I'm destroying the value that you see in the watch, but I'm adding the value that they see in the watch. And I think that's the important thing.
That's a good point. Zach, you got the penultimate question, I think.
And that was very well said. That was very well said. You definitely sold it to those who were sitting on the fence. They probably just fell over the other side. So you, in fact, there's two questions here.
You do the penultimate one, I'll do the last one.
Sure thing, sure thing. So do you think that brands will offer customization like yours in the future, or do you think the industry is a bit too conservative for that?
I think brands already do, but maybe not en masse. Obviously, you can go and get a piece unique from Patek if your wallet's deep enough. Smaller brands, not so much. I mean, Christopher Ward does a customization service, but I think it's 25 pieces minimum. So I think maybe that's where I've been semi-successful in some way that people can then have that piece unique. And the appetite from brands is very much that way that they are coming to me looking at some sort of collaborative white label service. So there's lots of discussions with brands about that as well. Inevitably, I think it will come down to this opportunity to do that sort of thing, but I think it's just a few years away. But I can see brands wanting to do more personalized things for sure.
Nice. Cool. Maybe collaborations with yourself, like you said, because that'd be very cool.
Yeah, fingers crossed.
You're not going to say no to that.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so I've got the last question. And the question is, do you see a growth in custom designs as an industry? Now, one of the first words out of your mouth when we went on this podcast, and I literally wrote it down, was you called it modding, which I thought was fascinating because I was like, I think it's like custom designs, but when you think mods, you think something very different. So I don't know how you want to go about answering that question, but do you see a growth in it as an industry, or is it very niche and you're trying to corner the market, which is a good thing to do? But it's more about casting your mind to the future in the next 5 years. What do you think that will look like within the industry?
Sure. Modding was the word used for when people were doing the Seiko stuff. I would call it customization for the stuff that I would like to do, but it is a modification, and I'm not precious about what word people want to use, to be honest. For sure. But when I started out, I was, from what I could see, the only person doing what I was doing. That has kind of spiraled up when I kind of built up IFL's kind of department, that they're now offering that service on a number of range of watches. So there's a larger company doing that, so to speak. There's other artists that I see emerging here on Instagram. Lots of people DM me asking how I do things. I don't reply to them, find out the hard way. I know it sounds really selfish, but it took me a
No,
long time to figure out what I did.
exactly.
So I think it's more of a polite thing that you shouldn't really be asking people. But anyway, there's a couple of there's some incredible artists out there doing things and coming out through kind of internet and producing some beautiful things. And it's great. I think it's great for what the small, very niche industry that we have built to do, because there's it's like a watch brand. There's hundreds of thousands of watches out there, and each one has its own place and taste and has its own audience. And it's the same with artists. The artwork that I produce will have you know, will react with certain people in the artwork. Other people produce will react with them. And I just, the only thing I would say is I think everybody should try and find their own fingerprint to what they do. So you can see that if you want something like this, you go to them. You want something like this, you go to them. And that allows people to kind of breathe in the same space and kind of support each other. I think that's the thing, really. It's an industry that we all need to be supporting each other in, because we're all trying to do some fun stuff.
Yeah. So you see it grow. You see it growing. Then you think it's got legs in terms of the 5 years of casting your, you know, a time horizon forward.
5 years has changed dramatically in the watch industry. Mm. No doubt, the next 5 years is going to be a different landscape of where we are. But yeah, I think it's either going to continue to be at the same rate it is, or it's going to be more in-house, I think. Mm. Mm. You know,
So head of customization, you for Patek, right?
Well, I don't think I'll get past the doors with all my tattoos. They'll be like, you're the delivery driver, or what's going on here?
dare to dream, of course, dare to dream.
Absolutely.
So, exactly. So yeah, we'll do the outro now. So you know, there you have it. Another pod done and dusted. We had such a great time, you know, with the dial artist Chris, to talk about his craft and his skill. Like I said before, when I first started getting into watches, you know, I never knew there could be producers such as Chris for dials, you know, Giv on pen and paper with her sketches, and Bjorn for his like digital designs. You know, so much talent on show. You know, and if we're able to give sort of a glimpse into their abilities through this podcast, then I think Zach and I are just about doing our job. I sort of touched on it earlier. Maybe you guys should sort of team up, become a mega faction. You know, you can start your own watch art movement, maybe, you know, with Xi and Bjorn. I'm happy to put you in touch, Chris, if you're not already. But it's just incredible. And like I said, if you're interested in enhancing your watch, then you know, do give the dial artist, you know, a follow and a reach out. And again, always fun to talk to you know, listeners and viewers, you know, about our watch shots of the month. You know, so you know, do drop us a comment and a like, and get in touch with us. And again, you know, I really enjoyed mopping up Watches and Wonders. You know, I think Zach, maybe next year we could venture over to Geneva and see what it's all about. Maybe go with the Watch Collectors Club, because I know Ed and Hamish have bought on a few tours, and we haven't done it yet, but I think we definitely need to. And I think we'll be back very soon, won't we, Zach? Which I hope with another interview with another aspect of watch collecting, which we're trying to tee up. So watch this space, do give us a follow and subscribe, and check it out. So thanks again for keeping time with us at the Timekeepers, with Zach at Source Watches and me at Watch Words. And Chris, thanks for coming on the show.